Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of T1 Talks. This is a podcast where we aim to share our experiences living with type 1 diabetes to build a sense of community for diabetics, both type 1 and 2. We want to dispel any myths about what it means to be a type 1 and increase diabetic awareness through our stories. I'm Gianna, a type 1 diabetic of 14 years and a recent graduate of the College of New Jersey.
And I'm Victoria, a newly diagnosed type 1 at 29 years old, and I'm a medical student from Saskatchewan, Canada. And today I think we're talking about something super important, which is how diabetes and mental health are related. And I think that this is a topic that definitely doesn't get enough time being talked about. And I think that there's a lot of things that are related between type 1 and type 2 diabetes, and the effect that they have on our mental health is one of them. And I think that there's also this really clear relationship between our sugars and our moods. And I know in our last episode, Gianna, you were talking about how high sugars impact your mood. Would you say that highs are worse for you than lows?
For me personally, I would definitely prefer a low than a high symptom-wise, just because I'm the type of person that likes to pack a lot of activities into a day. So when a high comes along and interrupts that day, and now suddenly I have to rework everything, I get really frustrated. And my highs tend to last a lot longer than my lows. My insulin doesn't always kick in right away. And with my lows, it's a much faster fix. With highs, I'm also feeling a lot of things that I can't address. So I'm feeling tired, but I can't go to sleep because my sugar's high and that's not safe. I'm feeling hungry, but I can't eat because if I eat, my sugar's going to continue to go up and it's going to take longer to drop. And then there's the whole social aspect that comes along with the high sugars. I really struggle to have conversations when I'm high because I feel so drained and I can't keep up with anyone else. So I get angry easily. And I'm already emotional to begin with when my sugar's high. So it just becomes really difficult for me to interact with anyone around me. And it leaves me feeling more isolated. So there's all these things tied into a high blood sugar that makes me hate it so much more than lows. But I know everyone's different. I know some people prefer highs over lows. But for me, definitely stands, highs are the worst.
I can appreciate that. I know, like, when I'm high, I'm just so exhausted and definitely just like drinking everything in sight. And before diagnosis, I was high all the time. That was just sort of part of my day, but I was sleeping all the time and I was just so exhausted. And now I find, like, definitely I get grumpy when I'm low. I think, like, I've always been a person who gets grumpy when I'm hungry, but now I'm like the definition of hangry when I'm low. It's like nothing else.
That's definitely me when I'm high and I can't eat something. It will drive me nuts.
It's so frustrating. And I have definitely some guilt around eating when my sugars are high because you don't want them to go higher, but you also, you know, feel like you want them to come down before you eat something.
Yeah, that's a huge thing with highs is where you feel like you've been waiting so long, so you deserve something to eat, and then you'll eat something and you'll be high even longer. So it prolongs the effect and it really sucks.
Totally. That's so true. And I think that that's a really common struggle for people with diabetes is trying to navigate eating food with their diabetes. And I think something that like I came across when we were doing a little bit of research for this episode is that there's sort of this continuum of mental health struggles that people with diabetes go through. And it starts on the continuum of diabetes distress, which I think every diabetic faces to some degree. And there's sort of four components. I really like them because I feel like they capture what I experience anyways with my diabetes. And that's that it's hard enough to just live with diabetes. And what we were talking about where like your sugars impact your moods and your moods impact your sugars. And there's just this really tough interplay. And then there's also the stress that comes with managing a diagnosis like diabetes on a daily basis. And I know we've talked about this before, but it's really stressful for people with diabetes. I know for me, like I'm afraid of going low all the time. I'm afraid of being high all the time. And so there's just sort of this inherent stress of trying to self-manage something that's so dangerous in a lot of ways. And then there's the stress that comes with social relationships. And so I think about that when, say, like my friends are getting all my alarms overnight because my Dexcom isn't working right. And, you know, maybe they're worried about me, but I'm not answering because I'm ignoring everything because I'm trying to sleep, things like that. And then finally, the one that I think every single diabetic faces is the stress that comes along with the practitioner-patient relationship. So dealing with your endocrinologist, dealing with your optometrist, dealing with all the different people, all your nurses, all your dietitians, all of those people who are involved in your care. And just the stress that comes with all four of those things leads to what we call in like diabetes mental health is diabetes distress. What this can lead to is an increased risk of people being more anxious, people being more depressed, or developing these conditions when they didn't already have them. I think it's really important to talk about this because I think, like, for me, it was sort of mind-blowing that these four things had been talked about in a way that really resonated with me and my diabetes. Is like, yeah, these are the things that are hard. It's nice to have that validation.
Yeah, I think that diabetes and mental health are not talked about together nearly enough. I would say that some of my most difficult struggles with diabetes have been mental instead of physical, and I think that surprises a lot of people.
Definitely. I totally agree with that. The mental stress is really, really tough. And I think that it makes sense then why diabetics have an increased risk of developing mental health conditions or developing worsening mental health conditions, and even an increased risk of suicide. And all of these things are correlated together.
And I can tell you that as someone who's grown up with diabetes, it wasn't something that was talked about in association with each other. So when I struggled with my mental health, it was a completely isolated issue for my diabetes. And looking back, I really wish that someone had brought up the idea of them together, because now I look back and it's almost obvious to me, that connection, but I wasn't feeling it and I wasn't seeing it growing up. So I didn't deal with it that way. And bringing those two together in the past couple of years has been such a key factor in living my happiest life. And I feel so much better now that I'm able to understand and I'm able to see the connection between the two and deal with it appropriately.
Do you feel like you judged yourself more for those like emotions and feelings because people weren't talking about it in terms of your diabetes, and so you just didn't know that they were related?
I would say for a while I thought that something was wrong with me, and because it wasn't something that was really talked about, I assumed that that was just who I was as a person and that I didn't have the potential to be who I am today.
For sure.
And so as someone who was diagnosed with diabetes at 9 years old and being someone who's now 23 and out of college, my problems with diabetes and mental health have changed drastically over the years. And I think this episode would be a really great opportunity for me to go through the different chapters of my life and how diabetes and mental health played an important role and point out these things that I didn't notice before that maybe some of you are going through at home and think is normal, but these are things that you can work through and overcome. So I would say there were a couple of common themes throughout my middle school and elementary school experience with diabetes. And those are probably the most important moments because that set up the relationship with my diabetes for the rest of time. And I became bitter about it. And the themes that stuck out the most to me were a lack of understanding from others, a fear of my doctor, and also just the frustration I had with things that made me feel different from other people. I think the lack of understanding came from the fact that every time I was caring for my diabetes, it was in the nurse's office. It was never in front of other people. And I think that led to its own issues in itself because I started to be uncomfortable with taking insulin in front of others, testing my sugar in front of others. And I think it was just because I had this ingrained thought that people were so uncomfortable with the idea of blood or with me sticking a needle in myself in front of them. And obviously my classmates weren't going to ask questions about it really because no one talked about it. So I couldn't really blame them for it. But I just remember feeling really crappy every time I had to leave lunch and go to the nurse to test. And then if my sugar was bad, I had to stay there. There were only probably two other diabetics in my schools growing up. And when I saw their sugars on the chart that we all had to sign, I remember just feeling really terrible about myself because theirs were much more managed than mine. And I didn't know how to handle that. I felt like it was my fault that I was a terrible diabetic. And that's what led me to being afraid of my doctor as well. It was just constantly being told that I need to do this better, I need to do this better. And I felt like a failure. I felt like I had completely failed at my diabetes. And it wasn't something in my mind to think, these people are trying to help me. They're trying to make me become healthier. They're trying to help me be the best version of myself. Instead, I started telling myself that diabetes ruined my life and I would never be able to amount to anything. Those feelings led to part of the isolation, but I think a bigger part of the isolation was just the fact that no one else was wearing these pumps and these insets that I had to wear. No one had the calluses on their finger from pricking themselves. No one else had to leave the classroom if their sugar was low. And it was just all these little things that added up and made me feel so different from everyone around me. I just really felt like I didn't fit in with anyone else. I ended up isolating myself because of that. I remember this one instance in middle school where someone asked me if I had diabetes because I was fat. And I don't blame them for asking something like that because the only thing you tend to hear about diabetes is that you have it because of something you ate or you have it because of your diet, your weight. And even though I knew that that wasn't the reason I had diabetes, it still made me start to question myself And I think that's where a self-blame kind of started. And I started to blame myself for that with every high sugar, low sugar. Everything was my fault. And the uncontrollable stuff that comes along with diabetes, I started to take that and blame it on myself.
Kids are awful sometimes.
Yeah, and it was just another thing I could add to the list of reasons to resent this condition. So by the time I got to high school, I was pretty fed up with my diabetes. I decided the solution for that would be to stop acknowledging it whatsoever. I may be tested once a day. That's me being generous. I started experiencing a lot of fluctuations with my sugars. I think any diabetic can tell you fluctuations are the worst thing for your body and the worst thing for your mental health. I was in a constant state of exhaustion, and I tried to use school and work to distract myself from feeling bad, but those things were taking up so much time that I wasn't taking care of my health. I started to realize, mostly through school, that I had a lack of interest with everything I was doing. And looking back, I would say that's probably because my sugar was high all the time. My A1C level was around 14 at this point, and it wasn't improving. I was just stabilized in this really bad routine. And so that's what made it feel normal to me. And that's what made me not question my mental health, because I had lived this way for X amount of years now. I just assumed that that was how it was supposed to be. And I didn't think that I could really live a life that I could enjoy. I just thought you were supposed to endure it, and that everyone was going through this. Nobody really liked it, but we were all just doing the best we could. I got caught in this hopeless routine where I didn't want to take care of my diabetes because I was depressed and because I was having anxiety. But I also was having those things because my sugars were so bad. I wasn't in a healthy state. I think I just didn't want to admit that to myself, or I didn't want to consider it, because I knew that would be something really challenging to take on and work through. Moving forward to college, my work, school, and health balance struggled more than ever. I knew that I needed to take care of myself because I started to feel the physical symptoms. I started to wake up with Charlie horses. I was sleeping through my classes. My eyesight was struggling. There were a lot of signs that I was taking a physical toll on my body. And the older I got, the more I started to look into the physical effects of diabetes, and I started to become more anxious about what I was doing to myself. My first semester at college away, I struggled a lot. I was in a really dark place, and I decided to try to see a counselor at the school. And I remember bringing up my sugars and the fact that I could feel my health was suffering. And I was directed towards a different department for that. So it was never something that we talked about while working on my mental health. It was a separate thing where they wanted me to see a medical doctor for diabetes-related stuff. After that semester, I actually got accepted to the Disney College program in Orlando, Florida. And this was a program I had been trying to get into a few times. And so the fact that I got in meant a lot to me, and I took it as an opportunity to make some changes in my life. I knew that if I was going to be working 14-hour shifts in the hot sun in a state where no one knew how to handle my diabetes, I was going to have to do a lot more self-managing when it came to my health. And so I started testing more, and I started to notice that I had so much more energy when my sugars were in range. I realized that I had the potential to be happy. I had the potential to be productive. And these were all things that I started noticing when I started testing my sugar more, and when I got a medical accommodation with my job where I was able to address the lows and address the highs immediately instead of waiting until my shift was over. I found a routine that worked for me. So this was a really pivotal moment in my life, and it was a big wake-up call. Eventually, I moved back home to New Jersey, and one of my friends suggested that I try the Dexcom G6. Through the Dexcom, I was able to start identifying trends, and I could see the way I was feeling spelled out in a graph right in front of me. I started to realize that I was more emotional because of my blood sugar levels, and I was finally able to connect the dots and realized that some of the things I was feeling were temporary. And it helped me feel so much better, because I knew that when my sugar was high and I was feeling really angry and really tired, that it was going to end, that eventually my sugar would come down, and then I could address whatever the problem was when I was feeling more stable. So that was a big benefit for me. And then I also just felt more comfortable talking about my condition with others, because I was able to finally understand it more and recognize what exactly my diabetes was doing to me mentally and physically. And I finally saw that I could be the person I wanted to be. I didn't see that before. I spent so many years believing that diabetics didn't have the power to live as happy and fulfilled lives as anyone else, but I now see that that is totally possible.
Yeah, diabetes burnout is real, and I think is something that we all need to talk about. And I know I'm really afraid of diabetic burnout, but I'm trying to like proactively put plans in place for what is my plan if I just, you know, like if I have to take my Dexcom off because I can't handle it anymore, or if I feel like I can't reliably count carbs every day. Because I think at some point, sometimes you just have so much going on that your diabetes isn't the first thing on your mind. But I think your story made really clear, Gianna, is like you can't ignore your diabetes because your mental health will suffer more.
Exactly. And I think people don't realize that because it's an invisible thing. So when you can't see someone's physical pain and you look at them and you don't know what's wrong with them, you tend not to believe anything's wrong with them. They seem normal, so they must be.
I couldn't say it better myself. Like, it's just so true how interrelated things are and how important it is to stay on top of as much as you can and just really be proactive, but also kind to yourself while you're doing all of this because it is so hard.
Yeah, you can't work on your diabetes and your mental health and think it's going to be easy. It takes a lot of small steps. So even if you do just one little thing each day, you're making progress, you're moving forward, and you're better than you were yesterday. So just take it bit by bit. Nobody wants to feel like trash all the time. And I think once you start testing your sugar more and noticing those trends that I noticed, you start to try to avoid those things and take care of yourself more so you don't have to live through those terrible moments.
Yeah, I think it feels uncontrollable when you're in that cycle of burnout where you're not testing and you're just feeling like crap all the time. Like, I think it's really hard to feel like you can control it. Like, I think you just feel like this is my diabetes, this is my life, this is how it is. But when you start testing, you realize that information is power and you can control your sugars more. You can figure out your bolus timing. You can make tweaks to your basal dose with your endocrinologist because they have the data to help you. And I know, like for me, I was an anxious person before I got diabetes. And it's always hard for me to, like, I love the data and I need the data, but it's also really hard for me to share that data with other people because I judge myself for what my sugars are. And it's just so hard to see those numbers all the time. And then so hard to talk to my doctor about them or the nurse about them and have them be like, well, why did you go low on Thursday night? I'm like, oh my goodness.
I just want to jump in real quick and throw out there that I know how disappointing it can be when you go to the endo and they're pointing out a million things you did wrong or your A1C wasn't exactly where you wanted it to be. It's important to remember that your endo's job is first and foremost to take care of you, and that when something's wrong with your diabetes, they're going to hound in on that because they know everything that it's doing to damage your body. So in their eyes, all they see is someone who's hurting themselves and they want to prevent that. Going back to that story I mentioned way in the beginning of the podcast about comparing my sugars to the other diabetics in my school, I wish I had reached out to them and found out what they were doing right instead of comparing myself to them, because I could have thought about the fact that maybe they had been diabetics longer than me. Newly diagnosed diabetics are known for having a lack of control over their blood sugars because it's really hard and it's a lifestyle change. And diabetes is something you continuously work at every single day. So really do your best to focus on your journey and where you're going rather than what everyone else is doing.
I know that we talk about this every week. We're the queens, but having a good social support system is so important, right? And I think including other diabetics really make you see that there's a whole spectrum of control that's both possible and realistic, right? Like, nobody has perfect sugars all the time. And if they do have perfect sugars, like, I know sometimes my sugars are darn good, it's because I spend my whole day staring at my Dexcom and watching my sugars and micromanaging them. And that stems both from my hypoanxiety and my hyperanxiety. Like, I don't want to be high, I don't want to be low, I want to be in range all day. I think that that's just a product of me trying to control things as much as I can because that's what my anxiety likes. And now that I'm pumping, I have had this whole new learning curve where, like, I'm going low at different times now. I'm still adjusting my basal doses and it's been kind of scary. I've had two sort of stubborn lows overnight now and I don't like that. I had one scare a week ago where I didn't wake up from my Dexcom alarm, which is kind of funny because we talked about that in our last episode, but my friend called me and woke me up and everything was good. But it's super scary for me to think about not being able to see or not be able to, like, wake up and potentially die from a low overnight.
Yeah, I think that something that scares all diabetics is just the uncontrollable sugars and not knowing if you're going to wake up the next morning.
Yeah, for me, that sort of eats at me sometimes. And I do a lot of things to support myself. So I have my Dexcom, I have my alerts set, and I have friends who see my Dexcom data and get alerts too. And that's really important to me to set that up because I live alone most of the time in a city where I don't know a lot of people because I'm here for school. And so I have a classmate who has my Dexcom data on her phone and she gets alerts. And I feel so awful sometimes because I know she's getting these awful alerts all night when my sugars are low. But obviously, like, that really saved me from either waking up with a really low, like I was already low, but like even lower before I woke up, or not waking up at all. And with that, so with my hypoanxiety, it's surprising, but I prefer to run low than high because, again, like you were saying, Gianna, like once you sort of learn all the consequences from high sugars, they're scary too. The consequences from high sugars are less immediate. So it's like you have high sugars for years before it starts wreaking havoc on your body. Whereas a low sugar is really acutely dangerous. So it's like you can die tonight, but it's not having the same sort of physical additive toll on your body over time. And because I want to run low, it means that I sacrifice sleep and I hyper-focus on what my carbs are, how much insulin I have. And again, now that I have my pump, it's actually a little better. I was worried it would be worse, but it's actually a little better because I'm able to do some micro-dosing and keep my sugars more stable throughout the day versus having those big spikes, which actually decreases, like I decreased my basal dose and I'm seeing fewer spikes and fewer lows. So like, I think it's working out for the better, but I think it just shows like there's always going to be something that we're worrying about no matter what, especially when we come at this from, I really have to address my anxiety before dealing with my diabetes because my anxiety can paralyze me. It will make me stand still and do nothing and hide under the covers and ignore the world. And so I have to fight through that all the time. And having this new diagnosis and going through all of these changes again, like I try to find the good in things. And I feel like this experience has really given me a lot better of a perspective on how chronic health conditions impact mental health and how mental health impacts chronic health conditions. And again, like stress gets a weird name, especially when we're talking about women's health. Oh, you're just stressed. Like, oh, well, stress is making your pain worse, or stress makes everything worse, Gianna. Stress makes cancer worse. Stress makes diabetes worse. Stress makes everything worse. And so I think that it's important to recognize that it is part of your overall health, and we need to be able to manage that along with everything else.
Yeah, and I think it's really difficult when you consider the reactions of other people. So an example of that might be if you're at work and your sugar's low, sometimes you need to sit down, wait 15 minutes to see if it goes back up. And if it doesn't, you need to wait another 15 minutes. To other people that don't know that you have this accommodation or don't understand diabetes, this can come off as you looking lazy, or you might feel like your boss could find someone who could do it without sitting down. So it can be really disheartening to have these thoughts running through your head constantly and wanting to prove that you can do all these things, but also really wanting to take care of yourself and take care of your body.
And I think is really common for a lot of diabetics is just like that lack of understanding that people at work have around, and just I think in the general population too, people don't understand how dangerous it is to have high sugars, how dangerous it is to have low sugars. And I'm sorry, but we don't have a pancreas that's doing the work for us. We have to manage it, and it takes some extra time. And now, before we get into our weekly goals, we want to give you some tips of what we think you should do if you're struggling with mental health conditions, with anxiety, depression, or even thoughts of suicide. If you need help right away, call your local emergency services or your crisis line. You can find the numbers for both the Canadian and the USA crisis lines in our episode description, and they're there to help you 24/7. And otherwise, reach out, even if it's to us. We're only a DM away on Instagram, and we're always willing to help if we can, and we're always there to listen. And know that you're not alone in this. If you can, reach out to your friends and family or your support network and ask them for help when you're struggling. I think it's important to recognize that there's no right or wrong place to start. All you have to do is start. And often that means reaching out to somebody, but even if that just means dosing your insulin more closely or getting yourself to the doctor, just do one thing. And finally, give yourself some credit because living is hard, especially when you have a chronic condition. But you're here and you're doing it and you're listening to the podcast, and I'm super impressed and inspired by your tenacity. So keep going.
Please be kind to yourself and never let diabetes get in the way of you living your happiest life. With that said, let's check in with our goals from this past week. Victoria, how's it going?
Yeah, so last week I had made it my goal to figure out what my basal settings were on my pump. And like last time I had just like set my basal dose, one dose for the whole day, and I wanted to sort of figure that out. So now I have two basal doses, but honestly, I'm going to have to keep adjusting it. It was rough at the beginning. I was running into some lows, and I think that was because my dose was too high. And so now I'm just like adjusting it, and I think I'll need an extra basal dose, but I'm definitely committed to making something work. And I think so far so good. Like it's getting better, not worse. So that's always encouraging. And so Gianna, how was your goal of the perfect week?
Well, first of all, I want to start off by saying I think it's really amazing that you're sticking it out and not letting the stress get to you, because I personally know how frustrating it can be to try to switch from needles to a pump. There's a big transition period. So that's awesome. As for my goal, I think it went really, really well. I didn't quite get to the perfect day yet, but I'm actually going to make that my goal again this week and try again. I think I'm going to nail it this time.
I think you'll nail it. I know, like, you sent me some of your, like, pictures of your days, and they look so good. Like, you're so close. You're almost there. I know, like, I can't believe we haven't done this yet, but we'll have to share our Dexcom data together, and then I can help cheer you on, too.
Yes, I would love that. I definitely think that sending you pictures so far has been a big motivator for this challenge.
Yay.
How about you though? What are you thinking goal-wise this week?
So other than just like continuing those sort of what I call micro basal adjustments, I am hoping to again continue to experiment with my pump and figure out the dual bolus feature on that it has on it. So that's like it gives me a bigger chunk of insulin right away as like an initial bolus, and then it splits the rest of the bolus over a set amount of time. And I'm hoping that this will help me with like meals that I find really hard to dose for, things like pizza, where like I find even when I count my carbs correctly and I do my insulin calculation correctly, I still find that I go really low and then either have to treat myself or can sort of manage to come back up. But then I go really high and stay there for hours. And it's really frustrating for me. And this is sort of a way to hopefully make it a little bit easier.
I really like that goal. I don't think I've ever tried something like that, but it sounds really useful.
It is really useful. And it sort of just accounts for, like, you can also calculate it a little differently and account for those, like, the sugar spike that comes from that fat and protein that we sort of traditionally ignore when we're dosing and counting carbs.
Yay, diabetic technology.
It's so great.
Well, I think that's all we wanted to touch on today. Next week, we're going to be talking about the financial side of diabetes, so tune in for that on Wednesday. Until then, you can reach us at our Instagram, @T1Talks. Thanks for listening.
And we'll catch you next time.